Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, 8th Canto, Chapter 21. Bali Maharaj arrested by the Lord. Text 24. Etan Vayam Vijayashama Yadi Daivam Prasidhati Tasmat Kalam Pratikshadvam Ya na atvaya kalpate etan vayam vijeshamo yadi daivam prasidati tasmat kalam pratikshadvam yo no tat vaya kalpate etan vayam vijeshamo yadi daivam prasidati tasmat kalam pratikshadvam yo no tat vaya kalpate. Translation. Unless providence is in our favor, we shall not be able to gain victory. Therefore, we must wait for that favorable time when our defeating them will be possible. Shukadeva Goswami continued, O King, in accordance with the order of their master, Bali Maharaj, all the chiefs of the demons and the daityas entered the lower regions of the universe, to which they were driven by the soldiers of Vishnu. Thereafter, on the day of Somapan, after the sacrifice was finished, Garuda, king of the birds, understanding the desire of his master, arrested Bali Maharaj with the ropes of Varuna. Purport. Garuda, the constant companion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, knows the confidential part of the Lord's desire. Bali Maharaj's tolerance and devotion were undoubtedly super excellent. Garuda arrested Bali Maharaj to show the entire universe the greatness of the king's tolerance. Om Gana Tirmanandasya Gananjana Shlakaya Chakshamilitamina Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. This is a very extraordinary moment in the history of the cosmos. What we are hearing is one of the greatest events in the history of the cosmic manifestation. Bali Maharaj is demonstrating how to surrender everything to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. What makes Bali Maharaj's example so wonderful is that he had everything. He had conquered the universe. Even the demigods had been minimized. Yet, that same Bali Maharaj would lose everything in a few moments because of Vamana Rupa, the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the form of a dwarf Brahmana. You remember how Lord Vamanadeva appeared upon the request of Aditi, the mother of the demigods. She was feeling bereaved because her children were no longer visible in the heavenly planets. Because of Bali Maharaj's great prowess in military victory, the demigods had to flee. including Indra. In this way, the mother of the demigods, Aditi, the demigods are known as Adityas, the offspring from Aditi. She's one wife of Kashyapa Muni. And the other wife is of Kashyapa Muni is Diti. She's the mother of the Daityas, or the demons. And you know how in the third canto, Diti, the mother of the demons, got her situation. She pushed her husband, Kashyapa Muni, to procreate not according to Dharma. She pushed him to engage in sexual relations not according to Dharma. Yes, they were husband and wife, but she became overwhelmed and neglected to observe proper Dharma, and therefore, from that union, demons were born. This shows you how the problems of the world originate. The problems of the world originate in the faulty conception by parents. In this way, parents bear the responsibility for the future of the world. That you can see very clearly in the example of Diti and Aditi. Because Aditi was a dear devotee of the Lord, she worshipped the Lord out of her distress, and to fulfill her desires, the Lord agreed to appear as her son, to give pleasure to Aditi and also to annihilate the demons, because they had become too powerful. The Lord appeared as a dwarf Brahmana boy. Because Bali Maharaj was so inclined to give charity. So when he saw the most beautiful Brahmana boy approaching him, he could not resist. He told Brahmana Dev, "You may ask for whatever you like. Think of my family line. Think of my family tradition. No one has ever refused giving charity. This is my heritage. This is my family culture. So you may ask for me whatever you like." And what was Vamana Dev's reply? "I only want 3 steps of land. That's all." So Bali Maharaj thought, "This young Brahmana boy is certainly very inexperienced. He doesn't know how to ask for charity. I can give anything. I can give him villages, beautiful wives, opulence, gold, whatever he wants. But he's just asking for 3 steps of land?" Then Vamanadeva began to explain the necessity for living simply, the necessity for controlling the senses. And Vamanadeva concluded by saying, "Actually, someone who can't be satisfied with 3 steps of land will not be satisfied even by possessing the whole universe." This is a hint that Bali Maharaj was about to lose the whole universe. So, Bali Maharaj said, "All right, very well. You take your 3 steps of land," at which point, you know, Shukracharya, Bali Maharaj's priest, became alarmed. "Wait, I detect something strange is going on here. This is not an ordinary Brahmana boy. I detect that this is Vishnu." And by taking 3 steps, Vishnu will take everything from you, Bali Maharaj. You'll be left with nothing. What was Sukracharya's mentality? He's a priest. He's attached to the remunerations given by his disciples. So, if Bali Maharaj indeed gave everything to the Supreme Lord, Shukracharya reasoned that Bali would have nothing left over for giving donations to him. So something had to be done. So, Bali Maharaj said, "Well, what can I do?" He told his priest, "What can I do? I promised You know, in Vedic culture, when you promise something, it must be done, even if it turns to be not in your favor. This is an alien concept to Western culture. In Western so-called culture, if you promised, but you don't want to keep your promise in the future, everyone will accept that. Yeah, I promised, but that was yesterday. Now today is different. This is going to Western dog on her. I promise, but you know now I don't feel like keeping my promise. This is something that disturbs Srila Prabhupada very much in preaching Krishna consciousness around the world. He was quite disturbed by persons taking initiation vows and then later just dropping them because, well, I'm a different person now. When I made the promise, I really meant it. You see, but now things are different. This is the Western version of honor. The Vedic standard is, if you make a promise, even if it turns out not to be in your favor, you still keep it. What is the example? Classic example. Maharaj Dasarath, the father of Lord Ramchandra, he promised his wife benedictions because she had helped when he was in a precarious condition on the battlefield. And so he said, you may ask whatever benediction you want. And she said, well, not now, but in the future, I'll ask for something. So then you know what happened. The night before Lord Ram was to be crowned king, all these citizens of Ayodhya were so happy because Ram was their everything. And the next day he'd become their king. That night, Maharaj Dasarath's wife reminded him, do you remember your promise? Oh, yes, my dear. Whatever you want. Especially on such a festive time. At such a festive time. The day before our beloved Ram will be king. Whatever you want. I want my son, Bharat, to be king. Not Ram, the son of your other wife. And I want Ram banished to the forest so that he won't be any inhibition to the rule of my son, Bharat. Very cold. Maharaj Dasarath begged her, no, no, I promise you anything, but not this, anything. No, no, please. And then she tongue-lashed him, you know, she just cracked the whip. What kind of kshatriya are you? This is really, how do you say, cold steel? You have that expression here? This is really cold, you know. She just sliced him, like slashed him with a knife. You're a kshatriya, remember? You keep your word in any circumstance. You promised me benedictions. Now I want my son king, and I want Ram, the son of your other wife, exiled in the forest. Do it! So indeed, Dasarath Maharaj did that. And the pain was so great that he actually left this world. And Ram, when his father was such distressed that cannot be imagined, informed Ram that, you know, you have to go to the forest for a certain amount of time and Bharata will be king. And Ram just took it in such a matter-of-fact way. Oh, really, Father? Well, whatever you say. In this way, not only do we have here an example of someone keeping their promise under the most extraordinary circumstances, but we also have an example of Ram executing the order of his father without hesitation. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, this is quoted as an example of how to follow the order of the spiritual master. Ram following the order of his father, Maharaj Dasarath, without hesitation. You can't imagine this kind of duty consciousness. Suppose tomorrow you are going to, if you were speaking from the material point of view, you can imagine, tomorrow you are going to be appointed as Prime Minister of Australia. And then the night before the great day, you're asked to give up everything and go live in Papua New Guinea or something. In exile. In the forest of Papua New Guinea. How would you feel? But Ram did that without blinking an eye, so to speak. Yes, Father, whatever you order. So in this way, we can see what real honor, real integrity is. The way people live today, there's no honor, no integrity. That's probably distressed many of you and caused you to come to Krishna consciousness. You had great difficulty living in a world without integrity and honor. A world in which your own family members can turn on you. In which the greatest love just incinerates before your eyes. In which someone who's so dear to you can the next moment cause you such pain. This is these kind of everyday occurrences disturb greatly an intelligent person. And you begin to think, what kind of world is this? What is my place in it? Why should I participate in such a crazy culture? So many people come to Krishna consciousness because they've been severely abused and destroyed and cheated and exploited, even by their own family members. I know one example in Sydney. I was talking to one young man, and he was a married man, and he had his brother living in the house for some short time. And he, this is a true story, he woke up in the middle of the night and he saw, his wife is not there. So he quietly got up and went out to look, where is his wife? And then he suddenly saw her coming down the hallway from the direction of his brother's room. So he immediately rushed into his brother's room to, he's very suspicious. What's this? What's going on? And his brother was laying there and just turned over in bed, turned his back, and without saying anything. So immediately the other brother confirmed something's going on. And so the whole family split apart. He lost his wife, who indeed went off with his brother, and that finished the relationship with the brother, of course. And then how was the mother and the father of the family supposed to deal with this? You're supposed to have family reunions, and all the children come together. So what were the mother and father supposed to do with two brothers who were totally, didn't want to see each other again? How is the mother and father supposed to treat, the daughter-in-law who first she's with one brother, then the other? These are real life situations. Hellish. Very hellish. So this young man was so distraught, and in that distraught condition he came to Krishna consciousness. The world is full of such horrible affairs. It's quite common. If you preach, you'll find that these things go on all the time. If you talk to people. I was in Christchurch recently, and one 17-year-old girl told me that her mother is giving her such a hard time because the mother has a boyfriend, but the boyfriend is eyeing the daughter. And so the mother's angry. The daughter's minding her own business. Now she's trying to become Krishna conscious now. just living at home. But the mother is very angry at her because, you know, the mother's boyfriend, you know, he seems to be more interested in the daughter. Meanwhile, he's going on with the daughter's mother. So this is the kind of world you have today. No honor, no integrity, no sense of dignity. So many young men these days, they tell me that they're in their young men in their early 20s. They bring their friend home, you know, one of their mates, and right before their eyes, their mother takes their friend. Yeah, it's quite common because there's so many broken families. And people living in small towns don't have much opportunity for, you know, there's not a wide population base. So I hear this again and again. 21-year-old guy brings his, you know, his mate home, his friend, you know, and the mother takes the friend. So in these kind of shattered situations, you wonder, what's the purpose of living? And many persons come to Krishna consciousness because of such horrors, which are becoming so widespread now. When you say that the only purpose in life is to satisfy your senses, then there's no other guideline except that. Anything goes. And that's what's happening now. Anything goes. Therefore, it's very necessary that we hear these examples from the Shastra, because they imbue us with the sense of dignity, honor, and self-respect that you'll never get from society today. You'll never get it. And it is this dignity, honor, and self-respect that a devotee should impart to others by association. This is what people should feel when they encounter a devotee of Lord Krishna, whether on the street in book distribution or at the temple. However, the people should feel, here is someone who has the sense of self-worth and dignity and righteousness that is so missing today. Then they'll be impressed. When we hear the examples of Maharaj Dasarath and Lord Ram, then we become impressed that there is a proper standard. Bali Maharaj, he also acted according to that standard. I'm always giving charity. There's never been a Brahmana I've refused. I'm like that, my father's like that, my grandfather's like that, so on and so forth. This is the way it is. Then Shukracharya said, wait, how could you have made such a promise, this is Vishnu, you'll lose everything. And Bali Maharaj's attitude was, well, if he's Vishnu, then why should I not give him everything? And besides, I already promised. So then Shukracharya had to think. He went into his lawyer mode, had to come up with some special way to get around this. He said, actually, according to the Vedic tradition, our scriptures, if you make a promise but it's not preceded by Om, then you don't have to keep it. Furthermore, we all know that in order to practice Dharma, to perform religious rituals, you need money. A poverty-stricken man cannot properly perform Dharma. Therefore, in this situation, I can easily tell you that do not keep your promise, because then you won't be able to perform Dharma. So Shukracharya thought he had the situation figured out, but Bali Maharaj stuck to his course. No, I'm going to give this young Brahmana boy what he asked for. Then you know what happened. You're reading about that now. With two steps, Vamanadeva covered the whole universe. His second step went past Brahmalok, the topmost planet in the cosmos, and the effulgence from the toenails of Vamanade's foot diminished the effulgence of Brahmalok, Lord Brahma. Krishna is the supreme enjoyer. Part of enjoyment is cheating. You know that from material world? If you've ever cheated, you get a little special feeling. I got away with it. It's perverted pleasure, of course. Still, you can understand that there's, by the influence of material nature and the concoctions of Maya, it appears that there's pleasure in cheating. We are part of Krishna. We have the tendencies of Krishna to a tiny degree. So, Krishna's cheating is all good, whereas our cheating simply gets us into trouble. Even if we're not caught by other persons, when we cheat, we'll be caught by the laws of karma. Still, when people cheat, they get this feeling, a daring feeling, I got away with it. Maybe you know persons who shoplift or have shoplifted or something like that. Even though they don't need to, they have the money, but it's just kind of the feeling that they pulled something off. So, Krishna has these propensities in full, unlimitedly. So, when it comes to cheating, no one can be a better cheat than Krishna. But his cheating doesn't have any ill effects. There's not one drop of material contamination in Krishna's cheating. Everyone benefits. Whether Krishna cheats, even when Krishna kills, everyone benefits. Even the enemies of Krishna benefit by being killed by the Lord. In this way, the Lord is equal to everyone. However you approach him, you'll only benefit, even if you're killed. Just like on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, all those soldiers who died in the presence of the Lord attained the spiritual world. They died with some appreciation of the Lord's great beauty as they were giving up their bodies. And those who were not killed in the Lord's presence, they at least attained the heavenly planets. So whatever Krishna does is perfect and pure, whether it's killing or cheating or dancing or playing his flute or playing with his friends, everything is perfect and complete. So Bali Maharaj understood, okay, Shukacharya says this is Vishnu. If Vishnu wants to cheat, why then let me participate in this leela. If the Lord wants to cheat, then we'll cooperate fully. That is how a devotee thinks. Now we are at the situation in which Vamanadev has taken two steps, but he was promised three, and there's no place to put his third step. At this point, the demons realize they've been cheated. They're watching, and they see their master, Bali Maharaj, submissively giving away the whole universe in charity. The demons can't believe it. These are the demoniac associates of Bali Maharaj. You can just imagine. You're possessing the whole universe, and then in a few seconds you lose it because of one little Brahmana boy who actually is Vishnu. Yeah. Just think about something you had that you were really attached to, and then you lost it in a second. I don't know if you've ever, most people haven't had such occurrences in their life until the time of death. Death takes everything away, as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita. Mitya sarva hanashchaham. I come as death, I take everyone away. So, death is a total loss from the material point of view. But just think about, during life, if you've had something and then lost it in a second. I don't know if you ever had such a thing. Maybe you had perfect health and then overnight it was gone. Maybe you had great wealth or some wealth and overnight it was gone. Maybe you had a brand new car and then gone. Can you understand what it's like to possess the whole universe and lose it? Bali Maharaj was totally detached, but his demoniac soldiers, they were very angry. Just see, it's Vishnu at it again. It's our eternal enemy, Lord Vishnu, taking advantage of our master Bali Maharaj's equanimity and honesty and charitable nature. Vishnu has taken everything. Our master is faultless, but this Vishnu, we must do something about him. Let's kill Vishnu for this dastardly deed. In this way, the demons, always angry, the Shastra explains, it's business as usual, they're always angry when they lose something that they think is theirs. They tried to attack Lord Vamanadeva. Bali Maharaj forbade them. No, don't do it. But he didn't listen. They still tried to attack Lord Vamanadeva. And they were defeated by the associates of the Lord. Now they have to enter the lower planetary system. Bali Maharaj is explaining here that you cannot go against time. He's telling his demons, stop fighting immediately. Understand the time factor. You know, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Kalo smi, time I am. He shows Arjuna, by way of the universal form, how the Lord, as time, is devouring everything. Arjuna could see the various armies and soldiers in the battle of Kurukshetra being crushed between the teeth of the Lord's universal form. So the Lord showing him how time gobbles up everything. Bali Maharaj is explaining this to his demoniac followers. There's no point in fighting now. Time is not on your side. No one can surpass the Supreme Lord as time. He says, the supreme time factor, which represents the supreme person, was previously in our favor and not in the favor of the demigods. But now, that same time factor is against us. No one can surpass the time representation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead by material power, by the council of ministers, by intelligence, by diplomacy, by fortresses, by mystic mantras, by drugs, by herbs, or by any other means. As we hear today, unless providence is in our favor, we shall not be able to gain victory. We must wait for the favorable time when our defeating them will be possible. This lets us know that there is something powerful in this world that we cannot control, no matter how our technology advances, no matter how our education becomes advanced. None of these things can disrupt the plan of time. You can become very Krishna conscious. You can be motivated to become very Krishna conscious just by understanding the rule of time. How time corrupts everything. Time ruins all our attempts to be happy. When you get a feel for what time is doing to your life, then you're living in reality. But most persons, they cannot feel time. You ever think about that? You cannot feel the ravages of time. Particularly when you're in your teens and 20s and 30s. You just feel you've got a future. My body has a future. My mind has a future. That's what it feels like. Yes, I'm growing. developing. Right?
You feel like you've got a place in the world. You've got things to do. And the world is just out there waiting for you. You feel you have some talents. You feel you have some abilities. And you just want your opportunities to manifest. This is how we feel under illusion. So especially when you're in your 20s and 30s, you don't think about time. You just think about, will the world give me the sense gratification that I'm due? I know everybody else is getting it. When will I get mine? Most people do not feel the ravages of time in terms of perceiving them as a psychological reality until they're very old. And then it's too late. But a devotee, by studying the Shastra and attentively hearing the Hare Krishna mantra, a devotee can live in reality. Even at a young age, a devotee can feel the ravages of time and situate himself or herself properly. That is intelligence. To feel time taking everything away, that is being real. I remember when I was a little boy, about 5 years old, staying at my grandfather's house, visiting them, and they had one of those, I think they call them grandfather clocks or something. Yes. And so my brother and I, we would sleep in the living room when we were visiting our grandparents, and in the living room was the big grandfather clock. I remember as a little boy just meditating on the clock, just make, you know, they make such a big sound, these grandfather clocks. Tick-tock, 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 tick-tock. And I was thinking, I was just 5 years old, I was thinking, what is this thing called time? All night long, I used to wake up in the middle of the night and hear this big grandfather clock. Tick-tock, tick-tock, tick-tock. This is the reality of life in this world. Time is we're looking for the enemy? Time is the enemy. You're looking for what's really destroying your plans. You're looking for what's really disrupting your life. What about the time factor? Queen Kunti mentions this in the 8th chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam. What is the verse? Manye Kala. Who knows? She told Krishna, I consider you to be time. Anadi Nidanam Vibhum. Samam Charitam Sarvatra. I consider you to be time. And you have no beginning, no end. You're equal in your dealings to everyone. Actually, she said, any problems caused between living entities is just due to their own faults, their own quarrels. Just look at Kunti's life. The suffering she went through, the sufferings her children went through, were so great that even Bhishmadev, the greatest general and the lifelong brahmachari, had tears in his eyes thinking about what Kunti and her children went through. This is a very... the scene, Bhishmadev speaking to Kunti and the Pandavas after the battle of Kurukshetra, is a very emotionally powerful scene. Bhishmadev is
happy that Yudhisthira is now able to accept the throne. Just think about Yudhisthira's renunciation. He ruled the whole world, and he was able to perform the Rajasuya Yajna, which can only be done by a king who's invincible over everyone. Yet he lost it all in a gambling match and had to go into the forest. His wife was disrespected in front of everyone. Now, at the end of the battle of Kurukshetra, Bhishma Dev is dying, but he's so happy that his cherished Pandavas will take over again. And Bhishma Dev begins to think, how could their sufferings be possible? Just think about who they are. And think about Kunti. She suffered because she was a widow at an early age. And then again she suffered because of her children's being harassed by Dhritarashtra and Duryodhana. Bhishma Dev began to consider, just think about the children. Think about who they are. Yudhisthira is Dharmaraj, religion personified. Bhima is the great fighter with the club, the greatest fighter with the club. Arjuna is the great fighter with the Gandiva bow. Think about their qualifications, their assets. Draupadi is practically the goddess of fortune. Still, they had to suffer. That was Bhishma Dev's conclusion. Still, they had to suffer. Why? He began to think. Time. It was the will of providence. We may not understand it, we may understand it, but the effect of time marches on. It's a very humbling section of the Bhagavatam, as well as a very emotional section. In Krishna Lila, you'll also find time and providence being blamed. When Krishna is to depart from Vrindavan to go to Mathura to the wrestling match, his dearest devotees, the gopis, are lamenting. And they're accusing providence. How can you be so cruel? Providence means time factor. How could you do this, taking our Krishna away? Krishna himself blames time and providence. When he was reunited with his dearmost devotees, the gopis, at Kurukshetra, Samantapancha, he first said to them, are you angry with me because I was away? Please don't be angry with me. I had to help my family members. And then he said, you should understand that the will of God, time or providence, brings people together and then separates them. So, please accept it like that. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, in his commentaries, says, actually, when Krishna said that, no, you should understand it's just time bringing people together. It's the will of God. Don't think madly of me. But Chakravarti Pad says, the gopis were thinking, don't try to pull that one on us. We know you're God. Don't try to put it off the blame on somebody else, saying it's God's will. We know you're God. And then Krishna said, all right, if you think I'm God, still I say I'm conquered by your love. And also, if you think I'm God, you should know there's no separation because my energies are everywhere. So this role of time and destiny has it's of great consequence in our scriptures. Of the five factors contributing to every action, time is the greatest one. Bali Kali Maharaj is explaining this to his demons. Time factors against us. We can't win no matter how well we fight. Prahlad Maharaj, in the seventh canto of Bhagavatam, he spoke the verse explaining why it's useless to worry about happiness and distress. He said, Sukham Andriyakam Daichyam Deha Yogena Dehinam Sarvacha Labhyate Daivad Yata Dukam Ayatnata. He explained that the happiness achieved by the senses connecting the sense objects can be tasted in any species of life. Nothing special about the rasa, the taste of sense gratification in the human body, is not special. It can be had in any body. Furthermore, Prahlad Maharaj explained, Yata Dukha Ayatnata. Why should you endeavor for material happiness when you'll get what you're supposed to get by the effect of time? Just like you get distress. Does anyone here endeavor to be distressful? Does anyone here try for distressed circumstances? No. But still, you know, distress comes. So Prahlad Maharaj's point is, similarly, if you don't try for happiness, still, whatever happiness you're supposed to get according to the time factor, you're going to get anyway. Now, just think about it. It makes a lot of sense. Think deeply. I don't try for misery. Does anyone here, have you ever tried for misery? No. No. Unless you're a masochist. Of course, for a masochist, misery is happiness. I remember once when I was a temple president in Copenhagen, Denmark, and Denmark's one of those liberal, wide-open societies like the Netherlands or something, so anything goes. Going around collecting donations. So I asked, what can we do for you? And they said, oh, we are your local neighborhood representatives of the Danish Masochist Society. And, you know, we're just collecting donations, for our very respectable organization. So, yeah, there are such persons who for them, misery is happiness. So actually, you cannot say that they're endeavoring for distress. They're actually endeavoring for happiness. Now, once again, you don't endeavor for distress. Still it comes. Did you ever think that similarly you don't have to endeavor for happiness? It'll still come. Ever thought like that? You've never endeavored for distress, have you? Now, why can't you also see that you should not endeavor for happiness? You'll get what you're supposed to get according to the effect of time. Sarvata labhyate daiva. Daiva, the supreme authority, providence. Same thing. Time, kalosmi, Krishna says, I am time. Think about that. This principle by Prahlad Maharaj will save you so much trouble. This Narada Muni says something like that also in the first canto. Tasyaiva heto prayateta kovido na labhyate dukavat anyata sukha. Someone who is actually a kavi, a wise person, tasyaiva heto prayateta kovido, does not na labhyate brahmatam upariyata. That's it. Does not endeavor for anything that's contained within the material cosmos, from the topmost planet to the lowest planet. Na labhyate yad brahmatam upariyada. From the top down to the bottom of the universe. You don't want it. You don't endeavor for it. Because you'll get your happiness automatically. just as your distress comes automatically. So Narada Muni's advice is don't waste your time endeavoring for something that's going to come to you automatically. Instead, endeavor to be Krishna conscious. You know, if somebody's working hard to get something that's going to come to them anyway, you consider that person a fool. What could be an example of that? I can only think of maybe someone's on the dole and they're getting their dole check, what is it, every week or every 2 weeks or something? Every 2 weeks. But they still have this idea in their mind, I've got to go out and sweep all the streets in my neighborhood in order to get my dole check. Everyone would laugh, you fool. You don't have to do a thing and you're going to get your dole check. So similarly, Narada Muni is saying, why should you work hard struggling to get happiness when it's going to come anyway by the effect of time? The effect of time means you'll not get one drop more material happiness than you're supposed to get or one drop less. Therefore, why don't you endeavor to be Krishna conscious? Very clear examples. And this is what Bali Maharaj is telling the demons. The time factor is not in our favor. Bali Maharaj could see the time factor. As you advance in Krishna consciousness, you'll be able to see the flow of time. Kala Rupa. In ordinary language, people say the shape of events. You've heard that before? So that's actually, it has truth to it. Kala Rupa, the form of time. Bali Maharaj could see that, and he's told his demons, no, it's a waste of our energies right now to try for victory, because Kala, or Daiva, providence is causing something else to happen. Any questions?
So, this point of happiness, if you're actually very happy, does that mean you're creating future karmas for yourself now?
Any material endeavor creates future karma. That's what it means to be bound as a conditioned soul. Every step you take creates a future reaction. Now, what are you going to do about that? You have to think. You may have this innocent feeling about yourself, oh, I shall walk in the park and enjoy nature. But when you walk in the park, you're walking on the grass. What gives you the right to walk on the heads of the grass without reaction? How would you feel if somebody walked on your head? But when you walk in the park, you're walking on the heads of the grass. There must be a reaction. The intelligent person thinks, how to arrange my life so that I don't get any reactions? Or how to perform non-reactive work? Why is it that you have to work? You're still working in the food section of the market? Okay. Why aren't you Bill Gates? No, that's not the reason. No. That's, you don't have the reactions. So think about it. Think of how the time factor is controlling everything material in your life. So how should you endeavor then? You cannot get more happiness or distress than what you're destined. That is spiritual activity, yes. Then you are independent. To be independent means to be free from the clutches of time. So you should have a program for doing that. That's the real career. That's your occupational calling, how to be free from the ravages of time. Yes.
Guys, does that mean that you abstain from journey duty so you avoid misery and happiness?
Now, what is your duty?
Well, I want to do different.
Really?
In the Krishna conscious, why being Krishna conscious, everyone's nature is different. So.
You know what Bhagavad Gita explains about that. There are two types of Swadharma, right? There's the temporary, secondary Swadharma, which is according to your material nature and your material position, the duties you have to do in relation to that. And then there's your eternal Swadharma, which is that you are the eternal servant of Krishna. So everyone's duty is the same in that everybody must render service to the Supreme Lord.
Mm-hmm. If you were doing the duty in the Krishna conscious, then that's the most ideal thing to do. Providing it's not against Vastra, say it's not a butcher, you know.
Well, give me an example. How do you do Krishna conscious duty?
How do I do it?
Acting with a Krishna conscious attitude means that Krishna enjoys the fruits. Yes, if your life is dedicated to Krishna's service, then by maintaining your body, you won't get reactions. Suppose I came to your home and I started taking everything, but in my mind I was thinking, I'm always thinking of Taig, you know? He's a really great guy. I mean, all glories to Taig, you know? But I'm just taking everything. I'm keeping it for myself. What kind of friend would I be? So suppose we do that to Krishna. You know, Krishna, you know, I think about you and... But meanwhile, we're taking everything for ourselves.
And then you've taken it. I mean, in a sense, we can't help but take from Krishna.
That's right. Therefore, you should offer sacrifice, yajna. A life performed without yajna, that is a very sinful life. So use as much of your resources as possible for performing yajna. That is your duty. Rather than fighting fighting distress and trying to attract happiness, why not devote your life to performing yajna? According to your ashram status. That is the purpose of varnashram duty. All the different ashrams and varnas are focused upon performing yajna for Vishnu, yajna by Vishnu. That is everyone's duty. And there are different styles of doing that one duty according to your ashram and your varna. Okay? Different styles of doing the same duty. Any questions? Yes?
As you're saying that there's different styles of doing your own duty according to your ashram, you might be sitting at home or doing what you're doing at home. I know Sichuan said, whatever situation you're in, use that to serve Krishna. So sometimes we can think, we are at home, we're householders, we've got duties at home, we're doing things at home, but there's something missing. We can get lost in time somehow, lost that we're doing these things, but we're not associating with the devotee so much, we can get caught up in.
Yes,
you know,
you're right.
Vaishnava case is what kind of devotee are you, kind of thing, and then we don't realize the mind's got a hold of it.
Hmm.
And so what's the answer? Because you are a householder, you have, you're not in the temple all the time.
Keep Krishna in the center of your home. Think, what is the purpose of your home? Is it just for eating and sleeping? Or is it a place where you can glorify Krishna? Bhaktivinoda Thakur sets the most wonderful example. What does he say in his Shuddha Bhakata Charanarenu? Majana Anukula. In that song he describes how when performing artik at his home, he saw his house turn into the spiritual world. So those are the possibilities. Make your home a sanctified atmosphere with Krishna in the center. It's not simply that householders can become lost, any ashram can be lost. You can forget what is the goal. What are you supposed to be doing? That's why everyone needs strong association. So if you're smart, you'll always fill your life with strong association. That's real wealth. So you should add up how much strong association you have and see how wealthy you are. We were speaking about that point last night at the party for Mother Jagatarini. Anything else? So think about this point. One of Prabhupada's favorite points, which he would speak with great impact. Why should you struggle for happiness when you are going to get all the happiness you're due anyway? Just like you get distress without struggling for it. So why don't you use your struggling energy, your struggling capacity, to be Krishna conscious? That's Narada Muni's point. Become a kavi, become a wise person, and don't endeavor for anything that's obtained within the province of time. Yes?
Similar question as time. Seems, myself when I hear it, it seems like a nice excuse not to do anything, just keep it all. Because so why should I endeavor? It's all good. Whatever happens, it's just a thing.
Have you ever tried to do nothing?
Yes.
What's the word? Okay, describe a day in your life when you did nothing.
Well, I mean, actually, did things.
You ate, right?
Yeah, woke up and asked for the half and I ate. Just did whatever my mind sort of dictated through the day. Just.
So that's activity. You tried to make yourself happy. So you did something. Most people, when they say I did nothing, means on that day I didn't endeavor to make any money. I didn't go to work that day. That's their idea of doing nothing. But that doesn't mean they were inactive. They were doing so many things.
Hmm?
That meant it was effortless because you like to do it. If it was effortless. What does Krishna say in Bhagavad Gita? This is the trap of Maya. Krishna says no one can stop from endeavoring even for a moment. Remember that verse? So just see the trap. You're going to get all the happiness you're due anyway, but still you have to act forced by material nature. Forced to act. You just can't sit there and say, okay, I know it's all going to come to me anyway, my happiness and my distress, I'm just going to sit and do nothing. You're forced to act by material nature, even though all you just do is going to come to you. That's why it's called conditioned life. The deck is stacked against you. You can't win materially. Even if you say, I'm just going to lay around and do nothing, and all my good karma and bad karma is going to come anyway. No. The mode of passion agitates your mind. You try to do something. Your only hope is to escape the influence of material nature. Then in that sense, you're doing nothing. Bhakti is doing nothing. Action in inaction, inaction in action. This is the mystery of bhakti. So in that sense, it's true. Devotees do nothing. To the extent that their life is filled with the devotional service, to that extent they do nothing, meaning they don't do any work with reaction. Krishna also does nothing. Kunti Devi exclaims, how is it that although you're inactive, you still act? You're unborn, but you take birth. These contradictions are bewildering me, she says. Manye Twam Kalamishanam. That's the verse I was looking for. I consider you to be time. The controller as time. Manye Twam Kalamishanam. Anadi. Nidaram Vibhum. You're without beginning and end, you're the greatest. You cover everything. Samam Charatam Sarvatra. Your mercy is equally distributed to everyone. In other words, no one can blame you and say that you're partial. Bhutanam Yanmita Kali. All the problems of the living entities are due to their own quarrels. Kali, the age of Kali. Bhutanam Yanmita Kali. Yes.
So, you mean charity with the work, if you're doing activity and you're earning money. So to give in charity to Krishna, is that still, is that karma yet? Is that like, is actually, now you're becoming, is it an economic activity to give in charity with the work that you
do? To give who in charity?
Well, to give to Krishna.
Yes. Giving to Krishna means that you are not subject to the reactions of the work. Of course, you know, there's different degrees of it's not that you give Krishna a tiny bit of your resources and then say, okay, that's it, I'm free of all reactions. I was joking with Sitaram Lakshman yesterday because we came from the airport and we pulled in to the driveway here, but then and he came out, you know, to welcome, and then we started pulling right out, you know, to go somewhere else for lunch. So I told him, it's like, you know, because many times in Bombay, the people there tell me, if you ask, do you go to the temple or a temple or any temple? Swamiji, every day when I drive by the temple, I always I make sure I offer pranams as I'm driving past every day. So you cannot that's something, but you can't expect that you'll have the same protection against karma as someone who's giving all their activities for Krishna's pleasure. Mm-hmm. Start somewhere and increase. There's a subtle difference between karma yoga and bhakti yoga. So don't feel in any way bad about performing karma yoga. Karma yoga means you're attached to acting in a certain way, but you'll give the results to Krishna. In bhakti, full bhakti, you're not attached to the results or the activity. So please go right ahead, perform karma yoga with great gratitude and delight. Yes.
Do we always have to struggle in devotional service, or there will always be sometimes there will be efforts?
Once someone asked Prabhupada, why does it seem that in this world there is such struggle? Prabhupada's answer was, you should think the opposite. The question should be the opposite. Why is it that sometimes in this world there are moments of peace? Just think about it. We have to change our vision. We grumble and complain, oh, struggle, as if we're living in a peaceful world, which every once in a while, you know, has some problems. No, you're living in problems, and the wonder is, every once in a while, there's some peace. So think about it. It's a great honor to struggle for Krishna. Bhaktivinoda Thakur said that the so-called pains and inconveniences incurred while serving Krishna are actually great joys. I'd be very happy if you have a chance to struggle for Krishna. If you didn't struggle for Krishna, you know you'd be struggling for useless things. So, it's a great honor to struggle for Krishna. Struggle to spread Krishna's glories. And then you'll become dear to Krishna. You know, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that the knowledge of Bhagavad Gita should only be given to devotees. It shouldn't be given to those who are not austere or like that, have no qualification. So how do we resolve this order from Krishna? Don't teach Bhagavad Gita to non-devotees. Don't teach Bhagavad Gita to those who are not austere. How do we resolve this? We try to make everyone devotees. Then they can hear Bhagavad Gita. That's how it's resolved. Struggle to spread Krishna consciousness. That is the glorious struggle. That's what Srila Prabhupada demonstrated. Use your youth, use your energies for establishing the glories of Krishna. And be very happy you can struggle in that way. That's why, especially Sankirtan devotees, become very conscious of Lord Chaitanya's mercy. Because every day, it's not like you're going out to do a service that ordinarily you would do. No. It takes some effort to push yourself out the door every day, and Krishna knows that. Therefore, for those who struggle to establish Krishna's glories, there is special recognition. Although such a devotee never thinks he or she is special. Okay, thank you very much. All glories to the Prabhupada. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna.